On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Hurricane Dean surged across the Caribbean in the last week at 165 miles per hour, a Category 5 storm blasting Haiti, Jamaica, and Mexico. Dean lands in the middle of a rough-and-tumble scientific debate over hurricanes and global warming. Is man-made warming pumping up global storms? Many scientists say yes. Some say no. Words are flying. The public has seen denial before on warming itself, and yet this dispute appears to be real. This hour on Point, scientists debate whether global warming is feeding hurricanes. We'll hear in a moment from two big principals in the debate gripping the scientific community right now. But joining me first today from Washington is Chris Mooney. He's the Washington correspondent for Seed magazine and author of the new book, Storm World, Hurricanes, Politics, and the Battle Over Global Warming. Chris Mooney, thanks very much for being here.
It's good to be with you, Tom.
So, I mean, we get very skeptical after a while. We went through all these years on global warming, and then here's the Newsweek cover. You must have seen it just a week or two ago saying, you know, that the denial was sort of funded and cranked up by people with an interest in denial. You write, though, in your book that there is a historically rooted, mythologically grounded rivalry between groups of scientists looking out on the weather issues and hurricanes.
Yeah, exactly. There's a very strong scientific consensus now that human beings are driving global climate change, that it's happening now, and we're responsible. But when it comes to how climate affects weather, and particularly how it affects hurricanes, there is really still a fraught scientific argument going on. I think most scientists would agree if global warming is happening, it will certainly have an effect on hurricanes, but the precise nature of the effect is still being debated.
How do you break down the parties here? Does it matter sort of where you got your degree in meteorology, how you see this, or, you know, whether your father was a disciplinarian, or I don't know, are there common factors in which scientists see it how?
I think there is a bit of a sociology to it in the sense that there are different methodological camps within meteorology, and the debate kind of does break down that way. So you have more empirically inclined scientists who are really well-versed in hurricane databases, for example, who tend to express a lot of the skepticism, saying our data isn't good enough to detect a trend in the intensification or the numbers of hurricanes. On the other hand, you have more theoretically inclined meteorologists who think about the thermodynamics of storms and say, if you put more heat content in the top layer of the ocean, this hurricane is going to be able to achieve a greater potential intensity.
Chris, you've followed this very closely. We're going to hear from a couple of principals in this debate in a moment, but give us a little history here. When did who begin to say what about hurricanes and global warming? You know, what have been the big footfalls here in our understanding?
Well, actually, going back more than two decades, scientists have been studying how hurricanes fit into the climate system and how climate change might affect them. But it was really the dramatic 2004 and 2005 hurricane seasons in the Atlantic that caused this issue to explode to media and public attention. That was because we had so many intense, devastating landfalling storms, and Katrina, of course, being the worst of them. And in that context, several scientific papers actually came out saying for the first time that hurricanes had measurably intensified and that global warming, either implying or stating that this was the cause. One of the scientists' lead author you're going to have on in a bit is Peter Webster from Georgia Tech. Mm-hmm. So in this context of huge media attention, suddenly the issue exploded like never before.
And take us back to some of those statements. There was Kerry Emanuel from MIT, who we've spoken with, who sort of threw a big rock in the pond fairly early on in that riff of reports.
Right. Yeah, there were two papers, and the first one was from Kerry Emanuel. It came out in the journal Nature, I believe, August of 2005. And what Emanuel did was he defined an index for how much power hurricanes are dissipating in different parts of the world, and he saw a strong trend in what he called the total power dissipation. In other words, the storms were intensifying. And then right between Katrina and Rita in 2005, two mega Category 5 hurricanes, came the Webster study, Webster and his colleagues, using a different methodology, more like a counting methodology, and they said that the total number of Category 4 and 5 storms was increasing globally.
And then you've got William Gray at Colorado State University, who rejects the whole idea, even still rejects global warming. Why?
Well, Gray is skeptical that humans are driving climate change. He has a number of arguments on that front. Essentially, he doesn't trust climate modeling very much. He's sort of the guru of the hurricane community. He's been in this field for 50 years. He's trained a lot of the scientists who are now the leaders of the field and who are, in fact, themselves debating over hurricanes and global warming. And one of the scientists who studied under him, Chris Lancey, I think you're also going to have on the air later in the hour. But Gray's very skeptical, and he's very skeptical that the data on hurricanes can really support the claim that there are trends, because our ways of measuring hurricanes have not been as good in the past as they are now, and in fact, they're not as good in other parts of the globe as they are in the Atlantic. So there's a lot of inhomogeneities in the data used.
Chris, in your book, Stormworld, you describe this debate among scientists as really highly charged. Now, maybe it was ever thus. You've got this great quote from Smithsonian Secretary Joseph Henry, 1858, in the front of your book, saying, "Meteorology has ever been an apple of contention, as if the violent commotions of the atmosphere induced a sympathetic effect on the minds of those who have attempted to study them." But you point out it is a very charged debate under these, you know, scientifically trained experts, and at times your word even venomous. Why?
Well, I think that what happened after Katrina especially was that everybody wanted to know what the heck is going on with the atmosphere and the oceans. There was a huge amount of media coverage. Some of the scientists involved in this debate actually had not seen this much attention to their research before, and not surprisingly, suddenly everyone wanted to know. So in that context, you started to get a lot of debates on television, debates on the radio, debates in newspapers, you know, people quoted saying things about each other's work, and that tended, I think, to exacerbate some tensions.
Newsweek magazine, in its cover story on global warming more generally, said, you know, since the late 1980s, there's a well-coordinated, well-funded campaign by contrarian scientists, free market think tanks, and industry creating a paralyzing fog of doubt around climate change. They're suggesting that that didn't have credibility, but was created anyway. What about this debate about the link between global warming and hurricanes? Is it seen as a genuine debate, a credible debate, or a kind of meeting of political interests on scientific grounds?
Sure. Well, I largely agree with Newsweek, and in fact, I've also exposed some of what they're talking about in articles and books of my own. However, when it comes to hurricanes and global warming, when you hear the skepticism of someone like William Gray, you hear the skepticism of someone like Chris Lancey from the National Hurricane Center, I don't think that you can just sort of say, oh, these people are pawns of industry. There's absolutely no evidence to suggest that that's the case. I think it is earnest disagreement. I think that scientists are going to sort it out. It may take some time. You know, it's hard to get good data on hurricanes, and every year only adds sort of one data point, if you will, when you're talking about the global average number of storms.
Chris Mooney knows something about it. He's from New Orleans. His mom's house was there and took a beating in Hurricane Katrina, so it's personal for him and many others. Our coastlines in this country and right around the world absolutely jammed these days. Hurricanes really matter. In a moment, we'll hear from a critic of the connection argument. Chris Lancey will join us from Miami. But let's wade into these waters first, if we may, Chris Mooney. I want to go to Atlanta, Georgia, and Peter Webster. He's professor at the School of Earth and Atmospheric Sciences at Georgia Tech, the Georgia Institute of Technology. His research has found that an increase in the number of hurricanes and their intensity can be attributed to global warming, or suggests that. Peter Webster, thanks very much for joining us.
Hello, Tom.
So, it's rough and tumble out there. We know Chris Lancey has called your research sloppy science. You know, we're not looking to have a duel at 60 paces here, but what have you found? What's the basis of your assertion that there's a connection, Professor Webster?
Oh, I think that statements made to the press, cheap statements, don't help at all. And I think there are some things that Lancey and I would agree on, and that is that there's a combination of natural variability and trend due to global warming. I think it's the degree of each which is the difference. I think where we would agree is that during the next 20 years or so, at least, there's going to be more hurricanes, more intense hurricanes in the North Atlantic. We started out, actually, three or four of the people who referred to as by Bill Gray as the Gang of Five, four of us started out as skeptics about hurricane connections. And what we did, there was a paper by Kevin Tremberth that we worried about very much, where he looked locally and inferred globally, so we decided to look globally.
Mm-hmm.
And trusting the data, we found a considerable increase in the number of Category 4s and 5s. There are problems with the data. There's no doubt about that. I might add that most of the errors, I do believe, are systematic. Are random. And there's a nice study by a guy called Harper in Australia who looks at South Indian Ocean data, and he found that during the satellite period, some storms were overestimated, some were underestimated. But generally, our trend tended to follow through.
What is the trend that you found, and how did you link it to warming, Peter Webster?
Well, first, it's a very, very simple thing. I call it climate arithmetic. We added up numbers of storms. But there's a very, very important independent data set called the sea surface temperature, the temperature of the ocean surface, mm-hmm. which is measured independently by different techniques and different people. And what we find is that as the sea surface temperature has increased, especially in the last 30 years, but even if you go back to turn of the century in North Atlantic, that the sea surface temperature and the increase of number of hurricanes have grown lockstep. As the sea surface temperature has increased, the numbers increase. As the sea surface temperature plateaued for a while, the sea surface temperature, the number of hurricanes stayed the same.
So global warming increases, sea surface temperature increases number of hurricanes. That's kind of the causal chain there?
That's the causal chain. There are many other factors involved, of course. I'm not quite sure you want me to get into those. The dynamics of the atmosphere also change. But to give you an idea how the sea surface temperature is changing, if you look at the area with sea surface temperatures greater than 28 degrees centigrade, that's a very important number because that's the temperature at which high category storms, three fours and fives will form. That's grown by 67% globally since 1920.
We're talking this hour as Hurricane Dean winds down about the unfinished debate over whether global warming is pumping up hurricanes globally. We've been joined from Washington by Chris Mooney. He's Washington correspondent for Seed Magazine, a science magazine. His new book is, it's a big one and really, really compelling, called Storm World, Hurricanes, Politics, and the Battle Over Global Warming. From Georgia Tech, joining us from Atlanta, Georgia, Peter Webster is here, professor at the School of Earth and Atmospheric Sciences at the Georgia Institute of Technology. And right now with us from Miami, Florida, another view, Chris Lancey is here. He's Science and Operations Officer at the National Hurricane Center. Chris Lancey, thank you very much for joining us here.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Glad to help out.
Now, you know, when scientists debate, we want to be careful and thorough in the way we listen. And I say again, we're not looking for a duel, you know, slide rules at 60 paces or weather balloons. But it's a tough debate. And you've called Peter Webster and Greg Holland's work sloppy science. They looked at sea temperatures. They looked at numbers of hurricanes. And you know the conclusion they've come to. Why are you not persuaded, Chris Lancey?
Well, it's not in any of the methodology that they're doing, but it's in misapplying the data that's available. We have hurricane records going back to 1850, and they assume that the record is nearly complete going back that far. And when one compares the vast array of technological observing systems we have, from the geostationary satellites, polar orbiting satellites, aircraft, buoys, you know, manned stations, hundreds of ships going across the ocean versus what you had 100 years ago or 150 years ago, you're going to be seeing a lot more today with what we have versus what was available then. And that leads to more storms showing up in the database and stronger storms showing up.
So Peter Webster says, as he says, we're in the satellite era, and you see just a greater capacity to spot hurricanes, to be aware of them. We just, in 1850, maybe we missed some.
Yeah, my estimates are that we missed 1850. We probably missed about six per year back then. One thing I think is an important distinction, though, is that we are in a busy hurricane period in the Atlantic. It has been very active for 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not suggesting it's not very busy right now or this season, but in contrast, I say it's more a cyclic phenomenon that we're seeing 25 to 40 year periods very busy and 25 to 40 years are very quiet.
Let's just get a sense of where you're coming from, Chris Lancey. Do you believe that global warming is a fact, man-made global warming, or not? I don't mean that as an inquisition kind of question, just as a straight-up question.
Oh, no, it's a valid point. Yes, I certainly agree that we've seen substantial global warming in the last 100 years, and I would agree that a good portion of that is due to extra carbon dioxide and methane, and I would anticipate the world would continue to warm. The question, though, I think the relevant one is you know, not are hurricanes affected by global warming, but what is the sensitivity? how much change have we seen so far, and how much are we likely to see. And with the observed warming we've seen so far, the theoretical studies and global coupled model studies suggest about 1% stronger today because of global warming.
1% stronger what, Chris?
The winds in hurricanes today than they would be in pre-industrial times. And if that's the case, you know, that's even for Hurricane Katrina, with when it was a Category 5 with peak winds 170 miles an hour, it's only 1 or 2 mile per hour stronger. If that's the case, then we can't even measure that. Our precision in measuring winds is only to the nearest 5 miles an hour, and often we're making a guess to the nearest 10 miles an hour.
So you're rejecting the greater frequency argument, and you're saying if they're stronger, it's negligibly stronger.
Well, actually, those are two separate issues.
Yes.
So intensity, I would agree. Hurricanes should become stronger because of global warming, and the sensitivity from the studies, and it's not just a couple studies, but all of the published studies suggest a sensitivity of about 2% stronger per degree Fahrenheit warming. So even in 100 years, maybe 5% stronger. The frequency, on the other hand, we're getting more of a consensus from those different studies that globally we should actually see a decrease in the number of storms and hurricanes around the world, not an increase.
Peter Webster, this all really matters because so many people live on those coasts and because, I mean, the whole world is sort of on pins and needles wanting to know where global warming takes us. I want to get your view here. First of all, just on the simple issue of, I guess, our observation capacity. Chris Lancey comes back and says, and you noted it earlier, but sure, it looks like we have more now. That's at least in part because we have satellites and everything else that we didn't have in 1850. What about that?
Well, very true. I'm not particularly interested in storms in 1850. I'm more interested in storms since 1945 in the North Atlantic and since 1970. And in fact, if you go back to the last busy period, the number of storms in frequency and intensity has increased. The number of storms have increased by about a factor of 50%. And the same number of proportion of major hurricanes has increased in that made too. I think the issue is a very important one. Why are we getting a greater frequency of hurricanes in the North Atlantic? And it goes back to my argument of the extension eastward of the very, very warm water in the Atlantic. The warmest part of the North Atlantic, the one is heating up the quickest, is the East Atlantic, and more storms are forming there. And this is and why is that? It's because coming off Africa are the seeds, if you like, of hurricanes, one after another. And when the water was cooler, these seas didn't sprout. But now the water is warmer, more of the easterly waves are becoming into hurricanes, and hence the greater number. This has not been manifested in a larger number of storms hitting the United States, and that's probably because since this busy period, we have been principally in many El Nino periods, which means more storms forming east, and also the Atlantic decadal oscillations in the phase where most storms form to the east. So I'm not particularly worried about the number of landfalls not increasing in step with the number of hurricanes.
Chris Mooney, be our third-party ears here. First, just on this issue of frequency and, you know, whether we're more aware because we have satellites and the rest. Here's one area of disagreement between these two, you know, esteemed scientists. How do you hear that piece of the argument?
Well, it's interesting. Actually, the debate started off focusing on have hurricanes intensified on average, and it's actually moved a bit towards this frequency issue in the North Atlantic. And there are a number of other parameters for hurricanes that scientists could also study, in fact, are studying. You know, are their average sizes changing? Are the regions in which they appear changing, or the regions that they're able to travel to changing? And what if global warming changes El Nino? How will that change hurricanes? It just goes to show there's a lot of different things. It's a very complex debate. Scientists are still, I think, studying all of its aspects.
Peter Webster, Chris Lancey says even if we get the kind of outer margin of what is anticipated on global warming, the effect on the intensity of hurricanes is likely to be marginal, manageable. Do you agree?
That we don't know. And I think this is a very healthy debate because I think all of us are trying to establish what the risk to the United States or to the world is from hurricanes, whether they increase or not. So I think it's a very, very important debate that we're having. nasty as it has been sometimes. But one must consider that if you increase the intensity of a hurricane by 5%, its destructive power goes up by 15%. So these small increases in percentage, whether you can believe them from modeling studies, which, as Bill Gray says, have their warts, or from theoretical studies, which by very nature are simplistic, we don't know. Maybe it's 0.5%, maybe it's 5%. But the important thing is to be able to keep studying these so we can establish the risk, especially to coastal communities, of what happens when a storm, what will a storm in the year 2010 be doing relative to what a storm is doing now.
And, of course, the damage climbs much faster than the mere wind speed or intensity because, well, when something hits faster, it does more damage. All right, here we are.
This is the third power of wind speed, actually.
Yeah.
So it's a cube, yeah.
Yeah, cubed exponentially then. Here we are in the middle of it with a lot of listeners who want to get into the conversation. Let me go to Jim in Wenham, Massachusetts first. Jim, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I think this debate is a bit premature as far as, because we're not even sure global warming is definitely happening, and it's caused by mankind. NASA just revised its numbers, and they were mistaken because of the measurements they were taking, and it makes me wonder the measurements that they're taking for the hurricanes also.
Premature? I mean, if you're sitting in the path of Katrina, you know, or in Jamaica or Mexico this week, yeah?
This country's always had destructive hurricanes. Everywhere in the world they've had destructive hurricanes. So it's not a new phenomenon. And yeah, Katrina was a tragedy, but hurricanes happen.
Let's take it to Chris Lancey. Chris, you're the skeptic here on the linkage, but is the debate premature, as Jim asks?
Well, as I stated earlier, I would agree that global warming has been occurring about a degree Fahrenheit in the last 100 years, and I would agree that a good portion of that is due to man-made causes. One thing that he touched on peripherally, though, is, you know, comparing storms like Katrina or Wilma or now Dean, you know, if we look back and how this hurricane would have been observed 100 years ago or 50 years ago, we would not have known it was a Category 5. Because we knew that because we were flying aircraft into it. We've got satellites peering down on it. But if it was, you know, 50 years ago, back then the aircraft did not fly into the eye of hurricanes. They were worried about crashing. They're kind of flimsy aircraft at that time. And where it made landfall in a fairly unpopulated area of Mexico, we probably wouldn't have any ground measurements that it was a Category 5.
So if Dean
occurred 50 years ago, we would think it was a Category 3 probably.
So they were back to measurement, but I really want to get you to respond directly to Jim on this issue of, you know, whether it's sort of worth our time having this conversation, this debate now. He says it's too soon and this is sort of pointless. Do you, as the skeptic, do you agree, or is it important even if you are a skeptic?
I think it is important to have this debate now. We want to understand how the climate is changing in the past and how it may change in the future. Of course, there's always different points that people are going to start with as points of agreement, and I think Professor Webster and I both agree that global warming is real and that man-made causes are a contributor toward that. Other people may have different points that they begin from, but yes, I do think it is important we understand now because, for example, as a coastal resident in Miami, I want to know what's going to happen to my family for the next few decades to come.
Let's take this conversation right down to the front where Hurricane Dean recently hit. With us right now from Jamaica, Kingston, Jamaica, is Jeffrey Spooner. He's head of the climate branch of the Meteorological Service of Jamaica. Jeffrey Spooner, thank you very much for joining us from Kingston.
Hi, Tom, and it's a pleasure for me to join you.
So here you've had Hurricane Dean right in your teeth. We saw a lot of the damage in Jamaica. You must follow hurricanes. You must just be riveted this time of year on their path. What do you make, as someone, you know, living and working in Jamaica, of the argument over global warming and hurricane frequency and intensity? Do you see a connection, suspect it or not?
Yes, Tom, there seems to be some connection with both the increase in the frequency and the intensity of these hurricanes traversing our area. And as recent as the IPCC fourth assessment report, which confirms now with much more confidence that, you know, these are some of the consequences of climate change.
When you hear American climate scientists debating this, as an islander, as a Jamaican, you know, what are you thinking? Are you glad for the continued debate and skepticism? Or, I don't know, does it leave you worried that we won't get on top of it in time to save, I don't know, Jamaica's coast?
We're sort of worried that you know, if we don't act now, then we will have to face very, very dire consequences. And as one of the negotiators myself in the climate change scenarios, I have tried my endeavor best, and we as small island developing states have tried our endeavor best to have, you know, countries, for example, the United States, to really understand what is taking place in our small island states and to really, you know, come on board, especially as it relates to the Kyoto Protocol.
What's your leverage in this debate, Jeffrey Spooner? Just a moral suasion, or do you have anything else?
Well, moral suasion is one, but for the limited scientific data that is there, especially for small island developing states, we try to put these data across. For example, you know, Jamaica has been impacted by about 12 hurricanes in the last 19 to 20 years. But if we look at the data, we have 11 of these hurricanes impacting within the last 8 years. And of these 11, 5 of these have been major hurricanes.
How about Hurricane Dean? How did it hit where you are, Jeffrey Spooner?
Hurricane Dean impacted especially southern coastal areas, and I do live in the south. We do work in the southern part of Jamaica, so it did have grave impacts on us.
Jeffrey Spooner in Kingston, Jamaica, head of the climate branch of the Meteorological Service of Jamaica. You're very generous to be with us. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Chris Mooney, there's a voice from the path of Dean. I mean, the stakes here in hurricanes are high, so ultimately on the cause of hurricanes, necessarily high.
Yeah, and it was good to hear him say that we really have to take action now. You know, scientific debates are fine, but policy is a different matter. And in terms of global warming, we should be doing something to prevent, you know, ongoing global warming. But also when it comes to hurricanes, interestingly, the scientists you've had on the air, I think, probably agree more about policy than they do about science. I think they agree that the United States, for example, our vulnerability is increasing largely because of the mass movement of population and property into vulnerable areas, which is human-induced but not caused by global warming, right? This is a population trend. This is demographic. And that's probably the number one thing we should be worried about.
I mean, people sitting on the coast in the paths of these. But if the debate doesn't get resolved, doesn't that leave some ambiguity about the urgency on the policy front, Chris?
Oh, sure. And there's no doubt that if global warming is increasing the frequency and intensity of hurricanes, then there's going to be an increased risk to coastal areas, unless for some reason global warming curves them all away from land, which, you know, I don't think is what we expect to see happen. So there's no doubt that there are policy implications, but it turns out that we're so vulnerable anyway that we ought to be starting to protect ourselves immediately and doing that better in all kinds of ways, ranging from building codes to evacuation planning and so forth and so on, even as we pay attention to this scientific debate and we, you know, take a precautionary approach to the idea that it might get even worse.
We've got a great panel with us today, two principals in the scientific debate going on, Peter Webster of the Georgia Institute of Technology, joining us from Atlanta, from Miami, Chris Lancy, Science and Operations Officer at the National Hurricane Center, and Chris Mooney is with us, author of the big new book, Storm World. Right now, Danny's calling from Sparta, New Jersey. Danny, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
As a fellow who studied physics in college, I'm a little confused by this because it seems like warm water alone is not sufficient for more hurricane frequency. If we just look at the Carnot cycle, if we look at engine efficiencies and so on and so forth, it seems that, you know, the same way a warm engine works more inefficiently with warmer weather than you would expect that if you have a water temperature increase and an air temperature increase, that the net result is maybe a little bit less hurricane activity. So I'm interested in the mechanics. I mean, why would global warming, if everything is warming up, cause more hurricanes?
Interesting question. Peter Webster, how about it? Warmer water and warmer air? Why doesn't it just sort of balance out or even slow down?
It's a pleasure to hear somebody mention the Carnot cycle. It's a very good point. There's another law that one has to consider, and it's called the Clausius-Clapeyron law. It's been around now for 250 years, and it says that the amount of of water vapor that can be in a parcel of air as it increases in temperature increases exponentially. So that as the sea surface temperature warms, that means that more evaporation can take place and more release of latent heat. So that's the first thing. The second thing is if the whole atmosphere warms, do you get to a more stable or a more unstable atmosphere? And it turns out that the status of the atmosphere right now, the middle part of the tropics is tropical atmosphere is rather dry. It means that the stability increases. Eventually, I hope we never have a world like this, the stability will increase. There's something like Venus. The other thing, too, in terms of frequency, as I mentioned before, it's a matter of how many seeds that come off Africa can sprout. And if the sea surface temperature is warmer and the circulation, which has changed because of that eastern Atlantic Ocean sea surface temperature warming, we have the possibility of more seeds sprouting, so to speak. And I think that's probably the reason for frequency increase.
Are you saying seeds like S-E-E-D-S?
I'm saying S-E-E-D-S. And the seeds are waves. They're big waves that are formed over the African coast, like weather patterns, if you'd like, and they move off and they move over warm water. And sometimes they become very concentrated and form hurricanes. Almost all hurricanes come from these waves. But there are many, many waves. About every 4 days one gets a wave, but you don't get a hurricane every 4 days.
Chris Lancey, I'm sorry. Chris, let me just bring the same question to you. You've expressed your doubt over the evidence of increased frequency. What about the sort of mechanical question here? If the seas are indeed warming, does it not make sense to you that that would give rise to more hurricanes, or how do you see the mechanics? Does it not make a difference?
Yeah. When we look at the changes that may be occurring due to global warming, the primary tools we have are the global climate models. And there is an excellent study recently by Gabe Vecchi at the Geophysical Fluid Dynamics Lab and Brian Soden at the University of Miami, where they looked at the 18 different global climate models used in the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's recent assessment. And what was interesting was that all 18 of these showed an increase in the wind shear where hurricanes form in the Atlantic. And that appears to be the reason why, when you actually count the vortices in these global climate models and they're going down, that's the reason why, that the ocean is supplying a little more energy, but the atmosphere is not conducive. It's more difficult for storms to form.
In other words, warmer seas are counter-supportive to hurricane formation, in that interpretation?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that's where this attribution of increased frequency in the Atlantic to global warming becomes problematic for folks like Professor Webster, because they are not backed up at all. It's actually opposite to what the global climate models are showing. So putting an attribution to an increase in frequency when the global models are showing A, decreases in the numbers of vortices, and B, a more hostile environment, I don't see how you can connect the dots there.
Peter Webster, we're going to forge deeper into this for us because it matters. What about it? Do you agree that the climate models are not supporting your conclusion, or do you read them differently?
No, I think there are two issues here, and I connect the dots very differently from Dr. Lancey quite clearly. The first thing is that we don't have to look to climate models. We can look in the last 50 years in the Atlantic, where the observations are somewhat better than anywhere else in the globe, and we see an increase in frequency, and we see more stronger storms. So the issue is then, are more of these easterly waves becoming storms? Well, that's one of the principal ways we have of storms, these becoming concentrated. And I might add that the concentration of these storms depends very, very much on the change in the circulation, where one starts off with a very long, very big wave and it becomes very, very concentrated, is something from fluid dynamics we understand very, very well. So I have a different perspective. But so you don't have to go to the models. But if you do go to the models, the question you have to ask is how realistically they are in producing the present climate. And all the IPCC models were run for the 20th century, and they were run till 2 times CO2. And the Vecchi study, Vecchi-Soden study, showed a change in shear that is true. But the change in shear was relatively small compared to the variability we get in shear right now from 1 week to another. And also the prospect of shear is a very difficult one to understand in terms of one finds that fewer storms form when there's stronger shear, but the distribution of shear during a season, there are periods in the development region where the shear isn't very strong. Mm. So it's a hard one to establish and hard one to establish physically. It goes back to Bill Gray's work back in 1968 saying shear was important. But there are some of us now who are starting to wonder somewhat about what the physical aspects of shear are. Mm. I think there are many, many new physical insights that we're gaining to the large-scale structure of hurricanes that haven't been considered before. A lot of people are doing this work.
Peter Webster, and then Chris, I'll come to you, but help us out here. I mean, you can easily outrun us on the physics and meteorological nuances here, but we lay folk kind of know human nature. Help us understand, you know, how two scientists come to opposite conclusions here. And is there something, I don't know, in your predisposition or some interest that would lead you to this conclusion, or a different, I don't know, university you went to, a different school of approach? I mean, how does it happen that you end up on opposite sides of such a big question?
It's a very good point. I guess I'm more of a fluid dynamicist in a similar sense to Kerry Emanuel. In fact, we went to school at the same place, had the same professor, so maybe we can blame it on Jules Charney, I don't know. But I guess you must remember that you say, do I have a mental predisposition to find these results? No. Some time ago when Chris Lancey was rather upset, I think, at some of the statements of Trenberth, we were rather upset too, and we were very skeptical about being able to find within this very, very slowly varying global warming distinct changes in weather. And but we looked at the data, bad as it was, and came to conclusions which we feel are supported somewhat by sort of the three-legged stool, if you want, of a little bit by data, bad as it is, by models with all their warts, and also by theory. So we're not surprised. I agree with Chris Lancey a little bit that the magnitude that we find is larger than would be anticipated by theory and by models. But if you just look at the data in the Atlantic from 1945 onwards, or from 1970 onwards, if you don't want to trust the pre-satellite time, the intensity has increased and the number of hurricanes have increased. More easterly waves have become hurricanes.
Chris Lancey, let me go to this same arena with you. We've heard some of your scientific counter-analysis to Peter Webster, and yet, you know, as a public, we can't help listening with very cautionary ears or skeptical ears to everything here. I mean, there was a time when we tried to talk with James Hansen at NASA. NASA refused to even let him talk to us. When you look at the path you've taken, of course, he later did, but he said he was muzzled for a while, so we wonder. When you look at the path you've taken to your conclusions, you know, it's, I don't know, predisposition on your part or affiliation, you're at the National Hurricane Center, or any other kind of surrounding factors here that you think may have swayed you in your conclusion beyond the pure science?
Well, I would hope not. I mean, as scientists, we try to weigh objectively what's going on and look at our hypotheses and either take models or data and come to those conclusions. Before I was at the National Hurricane Center, I was a research meteorologist at the Hurricane Research Division, also in Miami. As far as whether, you know, political affiliations have anything to do with it, I'm actually a lifelong Democrat and voted for Nader back in 2000. So, I don't think anyone can paint me as a right-wing kind of advocate there.
So, but it got under your skin, clearly, when Peter Webster and Greg Holland came to their conclusions. You know, are you attributing politics or something beyond what you then called sloppiness to their work?
Well, what I'm concerned about is utilization of a data set and cranking out a number and not really considering the implications of sampling. How do we compare storms now versus in the past? And I think some of us have learned a lesson in the last 2 years that you mentioned at the beginning of the show about the Webster and colleagues paper in in science, looking at the double number of category 4s and 5s. Since then, that study has been repudiated by a paper by Jim Cossin and colleagues at University of Wisconsin. They showed conclusively that if you take a homogeneous satellite data set, that around the world, the numbers of strong hurricanes are not going up. They are very steady. Yes, the Atlantic has gotten busy. As I said, we're seeing swings in activity. But the East Pacific got as quiet as the Atlantic is getting busy. So, you know, when one is utilizing these data sets, you have to be very careful to consider these biases and sampling issues. And I don't think that's been done very satisfactorily at all. And I think it's allowed folks to come to very erroneous conclusions.
Peter Webster?
Yeah, it's very interesting. The Jim Cossin study took the technique which has been refined, if you'd like, in the Atlantic Ocean and applied it to the other oceans, going back to 1985, I do believe it might be 1984. Mm. And I would take a different conclusion than Chris. Chris, I think, always interprets things on the non-global warming, non-influence of warming sea surface temperature perspective. I, by the way, perhaps would agree with him. There are many things going on in terms of circulation changes, basin changes, natural variability. But to me, the most important thing, and I don't think you can or you should, one would be morally indefensible to do so, is not to try and estimate the risk of these things. I think it's very important that we decide if global warming intensity changes a 1% risk or a 10 or 20 or 30% risk. That's the type of information a policy maker wants. Go ahead.
No, we hear that. I want to let one more call in here, if I may. Ted from Boston. Ted, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well. What do you know?
Great. It seems to me that there's like a natural inclination of scientists to question everything and look for absolute certainty.
That's what we pay them for, right? I mean, that's their job.
Yeah. Well, it is, but do we need to have absolute certainty in a hugely complex issue in order to take in order to take action? And I heard John Holgren, who heads the Woods Hole Research Center, speak recently, and he's one of the world's foremost authorities on climate change. And he said, he explained it in very good layman's terms, basically that we have loaded the dice, you know, with our increase in CO2 in the atmosphere, we've loaded the dice, and that it's not possible at this point with our technology to scientifically prove that any one storm is stronger, or that but that the whole system, that, you know, we know that because the dice are loaded, we will inherently be inherently more and stronger storms. And it seems to me that we need to, I don't know if your guests are familiar with, or you are familiar with, the precautionary principle, but we need to take action before we can prove 100% that something is true, because the stakes are too high.
Ted, our time is short. Let me take that straight to Chris Mooney. Chris, two things. First, you hear these opposite views from Chris, Lancey, Peter Webster. Do you, and in the wider debate in this community, do you presume, have you found good faith on all sides? And secondly, do we risk, you know, what's been called analysis paralysis with the he said, she said, or he said in this case, or is a response brewing anyway here?
I think the argument that you're hearing is a legitimate one, where people really do disagree for intellectual reasons. I think what we're also seeing, though, there's no doubt that science isn't a purely idealized process. It happens in societies. It's done by people. And the hurricane climate debate is a messy one, and it's noisy, and there's a lot of uncertainty, new scientists coming in. Science is an antagonistic process, luckily. It's the best process we have in an imperfect world. In terms of paralysis by analysis, I would totally agree with the caller. We never really have absolute certainty in science. What we have are studies and data that can either seem worrisome or not worrisome. To me, I would argue, as a citizen, as a journalist, not an expert, that the idea that hurricanes might intensify, some data suggesting they have, theory suggesting that they ought to, is enough to be concerned. And for policy purposes, that should be enough to start thinking about action.
Well, there's the debate unto today. We're very grateful to all of you for being with us. Peter Webster in Atlanta, Georgia, the Georgia Institute of Technology. Professor Webster, thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much.
Chris Lancey, Science and Operations Officer at the National Hurricane Center. Dr. Lancey, thanks to you for being here.
Yeah, glad to help as well.
And Chris Mooney with Seed Magazine in Washington and author of Storm World, Hurricanes, Politics, and the Battle Over Global Warming. Chris, always great talking with you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.